Now it's time for At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for both our older listeners and those not so old, presented by Chris English.
In this programme, we'll be hearing all about the making of a Brighton product that was once known as Mother's Ruin. We'll be talking to Josh Harper. And following my love of musical theatre, I'll be talking to Glenn Carter, who'll be playing the part of Shay Javara in the musical Avisa that's coming to the Theatre Royal Brighton at the end of the month. And then in a change of pace, Sarah Elgrew will be talking to Andrew Wallace from Chess for Oldies. And to round things off, I'll be paying a visit to the Sheffield Park headquarters of the Bluebell Railway for a sneak preview of their new interactive exhibition that's called simply Steamworks. All that's to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's produced for Brighton's only real local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, and online at radioreverb.com. But first, let's hear all about that product that was once called Mother's Ruin. And it is, of course, gin. And when I visited the Gin Cave headquarters of our own Brighton Gin, I first asked distiller Josh Harper what made his product so special.
Brighton Gin is a wonderfully perceived handcrafted gin made in Brighton by a team of about five or six full-time members of staff. It's a very smooth, citrus-driven spirit, obviously with lots of juniper on there, all handcrafted in Brighton and Hove, and something we are very, very proud of.
What makes Brighton Gin? How does the process work?
So what we do is we have an organic grain spirit, which comes across from Italy, and we take that, we distill it with six botanicals.
What are botanicals?
Botanicals are any part of plant. So it can range from bark to leaves to fruits and pretty much everything in between. So we're using six of these. Two of them are wonderful citruses, orange and lime peel. We also have milk thistle. Milk thistle is grown in Sussex and the South Downs, and it's known as a liver cleanser. Some people take their milk thistle tablets in the morning. We thought it would be a great thing to add to the gin. It also has some wonderfully nutty notes to it that we think works perfectly, complements the juniper that goes into the gin also.
There have been claims recently that you can use gin as a slimming aid. Is that just a figment of somebody's wish?
There's a claim that gin does lots and lots of things for you. It actually all goes back through the history of gin. The reason gin first came about was actually from the Dutch. The Dutch created a spirit called Geneva. Geneva had juniper in it, and juniper was meant to be wonderful for stomach ailments, stomach cramps, glandular problems, and a whole range of things. So that's where gin started. So people have always said that it's a healthy drink. As that goes, I'm not too sure. But it was then added. We then added citrus. The British added some form of citrus to fight against vitamin C deficiency, scurvy, and then finally tonic water was added. Tonic water has quinine in it, and quinine is meant to fight malaria and fevers.
And cramp.
Exactly that. So have a G&T, and some people, historically, you would like to think that it is healthy for you.
The process here is quite small, really.
It is, yeah. Yeah, we are a very small company. It's something we're very, very proud of, to be able to develop this with five full-time members of staff who are Brightonians, who are all passionate about gin. And that's what we were all about, is actually developing a product from people that live in Brighton, for people in Brighton, and not just in Brighton, throughout the UK and throughout the world, really, is we wanted to share our passion of this delicious, smooth spirit, and we really wanted it to try and reach the masses.
Now, there's a lot of gins out there. I mean, it's become the in thing in the last, 5 years, something like that?
Yeah, coming up to 10, I think, yeah. Now. There was a law change recently. The minimum still size in the UK was 1,800 litres. Very large sort of factory size. And that law actually got changed in 2009 with there being no minimum still size. So that's allowed for lots and lots of people to start producing gin And yes, we are part of that, and we think we've got a wonderful gin. It's proving very popular, still very smooth and full of wonderful flavour.
How much Brighton gin do you produce?
So each batch of our Brighton gin is 250 litres. At the moment, we're producing about three of those a week. So we're producing about 750 litres a week. That's probably getting us around 1,000 bottles a week. So it's enough. Don't get me wrong, if sales, some sales weeks are good, some sales weeks aren't so strong, so it will vary around that. But normally, I'd say, yeah, around 750 litres of gin a week.
So, I mean, we're here in what you call the gin cave.
The gin cave, yes, we do.
And sort of people are working around us. And there's a few bottles over there, a few cases over there, but not huge stocks.
Being quite a small company as well, our stock levels obviously aren't too large. And to be honest, we don't have too much room to be storing it all. So it's a case of storing enough gin in advance, but also always looking into future production and to keeping on sort of top of production. We've always got enough gin that if it is needed to be produced, if we do have a large order come in, we would be able to make it up, and within sort of 24 to 48 hours, that would be ready in bottles to go out the door. So the process can be, we can keep up with production if needs be.
Has it got a shelf life? Will it go off?
No. Lucky enough, because it is 40% alcohol, the alcohol will keep it good. Yeah, there's no problem with it. I've actually had my auntie recently came up to me and gave me a bottle of gin, and she said, "I think this has gone off," and I very happily took it off her hands because I knew that it hadn't. So that is the great thing about gin. Even if you've opened it up, as long as the cork's in the top, the gin won't go off. If the cork's out, then some of the alcohol may evaporate off. So I'd recommend keep the cork in and you're good to go.
But only evaporate. It doesn't actually deteriorate in terms of it'll poison you.
No, not at all. If the gin was distilled right, bottled right, and everything in the distillery has undergone the right process, then there is nothing that will change over time to contaminate that gin.
You're in the top end of the market with Brighton Gin, aren't you, for gins? I mean, there's a lot of them about. Was that a deliberate policy?
For us, it was something we enjoyed drinking ourselves, and for something that we feel our audience would also enjoy. We feel that this, by targeting it where we have, we feel balanced in with some of the other gins available on the market, but we also feel that it will, that a lot of people will be able to try it and appreciate it. What we've actually tried to do is price in a range that we feel with the time, the hours that we put into the process, that we feel is...
It fits into a particular slot. You're not aiming to be one of the top producers that we won't mention brand names, but a very popular one that I'm sure a lot of people have heard of. But they are producing thousands of gallons almost a day, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. I mean, yes, some people are producing what we produce here in a year, in a day. So the scales are completely different. But there are, I mean, we like to call ourselves a craft gin. And that what that does mean is everything is handcrafted by the small team that is here. As when you do scale up into a much larger distillery, some of those handcrafted elements change. So for us, that's what we really wanted to keep in our product. By having hands involved in the process from start to finish, we can ensure that the quality of our liquid is going to be as high as possible, that we can really focus on everything that happens throughout the process, meaning that once it is in the bottle and goes out to the public, that each bottle that they try will always be consistently delicious.
I mean, the point about small batches, can you be sure that each one tastes the same?
You can't be sure of it. And in fact, batches can change in flavour, but that's where our job really comes to life, is we need to make sure that we are controlling these flavour changes during the process. So my best part of the day, I get to come into the job, come into work at eight in the morning, try a little bit of gin, make sure that I'm happy with the flavour, make sure that the flavour is consistent to what we're used to. If there is any variable, then and we're not happy with the gin, we won't bottle it. It will not become Brighton gin. So we are very sure to make sure that only the best quality or the quality that we agree with will be bottled. That makes sure that the audience, the people that buy the bottles, are always going to get that consistent, delicious flavour.
The product is really only available in certain selected either pubs or bars or supermarkets. Again, is that a deliberate move?
Yes. I mean, being a handcrafted spirit, I think it would be quite interesting to be able to almost get it anywhere. And for us, you know, we really wanted to... what's the word I'm looking for here? We wanted to grow with the community around us, with the area we're from, and really grow organically. We wanted to make sure that we are in, again, locally in bars and in restaurants. Hopefully you'll find us in the majority of them, because again, we want to support the people around us, the businesses around us, being that we are from Brighton. And yes, if you had then found us in all your supermarkets, then that does take away from the fact that we are a local handcrafted product. So you will find us in a few, but not in all of
them. Select.
Select, exactly that, yes.
And finally, Josh, gin has been labelled Mother's Ruin. How did that come about?
So that again comes back in the history of it, going back when they basically introduced these laws. They introduced 8 gin acts to stop us drinking as much gin as we were. And this was back in sort of the mid-1700s. What, unfortunately, people didn't realise the medical properties behind gin, or the lack of, shall we say. So mothers were drinking copious amounts of this quite strong alcohol, and unfortunately it wasn't doing very good to them. And it was, yeah, very much mother's ruin. Mothers dropping babies, as we've heard in stories from back in the day, and all this kind of stuff that really was actually happening.
But that won't happen with Brighton Gin.
Won't happen with Brighton Gin. I mean, we always like to say, please drink responsibly. But no, it's, I mean, again, it depends how much you drink. It could ruin some mothers. But no, we'd like to say that everyone's going to drink it responsibly and enjoy the product rather than drinking as much as possible.
And the future?
The future is hopefully looking similar to what we're doing at the moment. Again, for us, as I mentioned, we are a small team. We are hopefully going to be continued to do this for a while. That is the one thing I do, or one of the many things I do love about Brighton Gin, is that we are all very, very passionate about what we do. And we are all hopefully going to be doing this for a very long time. We enjoy it. We love it. Why would we try and change it?
Josh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We heard from Josh Harper, who's a distiller of our own Brighton Gin. Now let's have a chat with someone who'll be treading the boards of the Theatre Royal at the end of the month as Shay in the classic Andrew Lloyd Webber tale of death and glory in 1930s Argentina, all as told in the musical Evita.
Well, the musical itself is the story of Evita, basically Eva Perón, who was from her childhood, 14, 15 years old, right the way through to her premature death, and her rise to sort of iconism, if that's even a word. She grew in popularity in Argentina, and ultimately married the person who became the dictator of one of the dictators of Argentina, Juan Perón, who she was a hugely controversial character. I mean, let's be clear about it. She did so much for women's rights, etc., and then the media turned on her and, you know, and various powers that be, and proliferated stories about her embezzling money, etc., etc. So the musical covers her life, including the you know, a lot of the allegations that were made against her. So it also has some of the most incredible music in musical theatre history, written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's just some of the most popular tunes that he's written. So that's basically it in a nutshell. The character I play is Che Guevara, or Che, in fact, in the musical.
And that character, where does he fit into, where does Che fit into the story?
Well, in truth, in the Eva Perón, Juan Perón story, he doesn't fit in at all. He wasn't around at that time. They're both from different ages, really. But in the musical, Che is the narrator. He's the person who brings the audience along the journey and points out various aspects of the Perón story throughout, and illustrates the sort of the attitude in which he was viewed, or the problems that she was alleged to have sort of faced, etc. So he's very much the narrator, and he's interwoven throughout the story in the musical, but in actuality, in the reality of historical events, he wasn't around at the time.
Now, having said that, you've got a couple of really iconic numbers in the show. Probably the best known, I think, is Oh, What a Circus.
Yes, apparently so. Yes, I mean, it is. I don't necessarily think it's my favourite song in the show by a long way, but it is. It's one that was certainly came into public attention with David Essex singing it, making it a single, etc. But "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina," I think, is the most iconic piece of music in the show itself. And most people will know that. If they don't know what it's from, they may well know the tune of it. It's been around since, for decades now.
And of course, that's sung by Lucy O'Byrne, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes, brilliantly.
I mean, Lucy is also from a musical background, like yourself. But dare I say it, she's perhaps a little younger.
Yeah, oh yes, she's younger than I am. Yes, definitely. Lucy is from a family that have been involved in sort of music theatre. I think two generations of her parents, certainly, and her sister and Lucy herself are all very successful in the industry. But yeah, I'm older than Lucy, absolutely.
And of course, you've got quite a history of musical theatre yourself. Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway and the West End, and Danny DeVito in Jersey Boys. So
Danny DeVito, yeah.
Yeah. So how does Evita compare to those?
Well, it compares in the sense that they're the same genre as the pieces you just mentioned. I mean, they are all incredibly different, other than the fact that all three, if I'm actually playing Che Guevara, are all real historic people, the people who actually existed. And I tend to have done so many parts of people who are actually real people, like Floyd Collins or Che, Jesus, many, Tommy DeVito. It's just, it's a wonderfully diverse industry. And then the musical history of Andrew Lloyd Webber and various other writers are just the diverse music and are just wonderful. I love the medium itself, musical theatre, because it speaks to people. We all associate our life with music. Music comes and goes in our throughout the ages, but when you hear a particular song in any point in our life, it can take us back instantly to the time when we first heard it. And then some of the music that I've been blessed to sing in these shows is just phenomenal and iconic.
But of course, you've also starred in straight plays like Exonerated and Floyd Collins. So,
yeah.
Which is your preference, musical or straight?
To be honest with you, whenever I'm doing one, I always quite look forward to doing the other. When I was in a play recently, I did The Case of the Frightened Lady touring Britain, which is a straight play. An Edgar Wallace mystery play. I then look forward to getting back into a musical and doing a musical. I always think, oh, I'd love to do a play again. But for me, I just like, which is why I'm an actor. I like the variation, the constant not knowing what's coming next and then to adapt to that. I love them both. I've done film, TV, straight plays and musical theatre, and I love it all, to be perfectly honest.
How difficult is it with a tour to put everything into it night after night when you've been doing it for weeks?
I've never found that difficult, to be honest with you. I mean, every single night you walk onto a stage, I walk onto a stage in front of hundreds or a lot of the time, thousands of people. And there was something very real about that. You walk in front, you've got, you know, 1,000 eyes on you. It's very difficult to, it was almost impossible, I find, to hide or to phone it in, as they say in the industry. It's a very real experience. So you have the energy and being supplied by the audience to you, and my concentration has to be 100%. I always do the best work I can, you know, always. There's never a moment of complacency on a stage. I mean, that's where we make huge mistakes, huge errors, you know, that become famous in the industry, where people completely forget songs and stuff. It's just, it is not something that's difficult to attain concentration, I don't find, on a stage. I think it's something important, but it's all about preparation. Everything we do is about preparation.
So is the
meditating for the preparation, you know, getting ready for the show, warming up, getting focused, and then doing it. And every show is different.
I was just going to say, are there changes, little subtle changes that perhaps the audience don't notice every night?
Oh, there are always changes, and there are always things that vary, you know, in the sense that, you know, no matter how much preparation we do, there is always a moment where maybe a word doesn't come to your head as quickly as you'd like it to, or, you know, or something happens on the stage where somebody's in a different position, and you know, and everything adjusts. But that's the whole point of concentration. It's not that things are identical. It's the fact that we always adjust to the variation. It's balance, you know, like a pendulum swinging. There's obviously the point where balance is at its best. But then it swings to the left and we compensate. It swings to the right, we compensate. Always looking for the, you know, for the perfect balance.
Now, the show's coming to Brighton. So have you been to the Theatre Royal before?
Yes, I did Case of the Frightened Lady there and Jesus Christ Superstar there. Jesus Christ Superstar, I think, was, gosh, 13 years ago, maybe, something like that. And Case of the Frightened Lady was last year. It's a beautiful theatre.
And what about Brighton? I mean, Brighton's a bit eclectic. It's lots of different facets. So how do you think the audience is going to take to Evita?
I think the audiences in Brighton are very sophisticated. You know, there are all sorts of people in Brighton, which is one of the best places in Britain, I think, Brighton. I almost bought a house there myself. I love the place. I just love the whole energy of Brighton. But there are all sorts of people there. And there's a hugely sophisticated theatre-going public there. And I think they will absolutely love Evita.
We look forward to it. But going back to numbers on the show, I talked about Oh, What a Circus. And you said, perhaps it's not my favourite number. What is your favourite number from the show?
There's a question. I think the favourite number I sing, ironically, is Waltz for Avery and Shay, which is probably the least known. It's just lyrically, it's fabulous, and it's the moment where Shay actually manifests himself, either in reality or in Ava Perron's head in the musical, and she has they have a conversation together. The rest of the time, Shay is commenting. But that's my favourite moment in the show. Song wise, but probably I think the best song that Che sings is High Flying Adored, I think. But Don't Cry For Me Argentina is the most famous song from the show. If there are so many wonderful pieces of music, just like there are in Jesus Christ Superstar and, you know, and all Lloyd Webber's music, he does write fabulous melodies that it's difficult to pick any one. You know, in one mood I will like one song, in another mood I would like another song. You know, they're all wonderful.
Glenn, thanks very much. We look forward to seeing you at the Theatre Royal in Brighton later in the month. And thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Glenn Carter, otherwise known as Shay, from the musical Evita, that will be coming to the Theatre Royal Brighton from Tuesday the 30th of October until Saturday the 3rd of November. Now it's time for a game of chess, or rather it would be if I had a clue how to play it. However, someone who does know how to play and wants to find lots of you who would like to join him to learn how to play is Andrew Wallace from Chess for Oldies. And Andrew now joins Sarah L. Grew in the Grey Matter studio.
Hello, Andrew. Could you tell us a bit more about chess in schools and communities and what your role in the organisation is?
I'm a tutor for the charity Chess in Schools and Communities, which is mostly based in primary schools, getting children to learn chess again, with all the benefits of that for concentration, forward thinking, and just being able to sort of sit down and concentrate for periods of time. We're also running projects in libraries, in prisons, and also with older people. And I'm here today to talk about a project that we're running in Brighton for Chess for Beginners for older people.
So what basically is a game of chess?
The game of chess is a very ancient board game. It's the most widely played board game in the world. The rules are the same everywhere you go, so you don't need to be able to speak the same language as somebody to be able to play chess. The most important thing probably with chess is to be able to play somebody of your own level.
And how hard is it to learn to play?
There's a bit of a misconception that chess is difficult to learn to play. Often people, somebody will say, I'll teach you chess, they'll get all the pieces out and try to teach you chess in 5 minutes. Every piece has its different moves. It's quite a complicated game to learn very quickly. What we do is we break the game down, so we just learn piece by piece, so that you'll be playing mini games with just pawns, for example, 1 week, and then you gradually build it up from there. So within 5 weeks or so, you'll know how all the pieces move. Then we introduce check and checkmate. So within sort of 7 or 8 weeks, you should be playing a full game of chess.
Do you find that a lot of people are surprised at how easy it is to learn?
Yes, I think they are. I think a lot of people think that chess is a very, very difficult game to learn, that you need to be highly educated to play chess, whereas it's actually quite a simple game once you break it down.
Okay, and what makes chess so special?
Chess is really important. It's a higher cognitive activity, so it's very good for the brain. We understand the importance of exercise as we get older. What we're increasingly understanding is the importance of keeping our brains active, and chess is gym for the mind. It's an activity that makes your brain work, so it's very good for slowing down the onset of dementia, for example.
So is that why it's so important for older people to learn chess?
It is important, yes. It's important to keep the brain active, and chess is a sort of a cognitive challenge that, although it's not a complex game to learn, it's complex in its possibilities.
I imagine it's also quite fun.
It is. It's a fun and sociable game that you can play with your grandchildren, for example. It's useful for getting people out of the house. It's good for combating social isolation.
So I believe that you've ran this chess course before, is that right?
Yes, this course ran earlier this year at Age UK, and we'll be running another course starting on the 13th of November this year.
Fantastic. And where is it being held?
It's at the Age UK headquarters in Prestonville Road, just off the Seven Dials. Starting on the 13th of November, Tuesday the 13th of November, for 10 weeks. It's completely free. It runs from 10 a.m. until 11:30 in the morning.
How can people get a bit more information about the course and how to sign up?
They should email me at ajwallace64@yahoo.es or contact me by phone on 07900 666 077.
And how much does the course cost?
The course is free, although we do welcome donations if you're happy with the course and you wish to make a donation to Chess in Schools and Communities. That would be most welcome.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Sarah Elgrew was talking there to Andrew Wallace all about the forthcoming Chess for Oldies at Age UK Brighton by the Seven Dials next month. Now it's time to tell you all about the Bluebell Railway's new interactive exhibition that's called simply Steamworks. It's at Sheffield Park Station, and to find out more, I went along for a preview from where Ruth Rowett explains what it's all about.
The ASH project is a Heritage Lottery funded project worth around £1.5 million. We are spending some of that money on the building of a maintenance shed with three washout pits for locomotives. But also we have already lightened and brightened our current running shed, which is the shed that people can walk around and visit the static locomotives. And we've also put in a new area for families, an interactive area. So we've got a new exhibit in that space with walkways, giving more access, because ASH actually stands for Accessible Steam Heritage. So that's the project, to making the access to those locomotives better for everybody.
I mean, it's always been a bit like a black hole of Calcutta, isn't it, in there?
Yes.
And locomotives with lots of signs that say, do not climb, and for safety reasons. So is the whole thing an idea to bring it
a bit closer to the people.
Definitely. I mean, it was very dark and dingy in there. And you did used to go around on the lower level. You could look up, you know, up at these engines, but you're standing next to their wheels, basically. Now we've got some new platforms in there through part of some of the shed. And we're also going to ramp up to the footplate level of one engine, 75027. And people will be able to go up and onto that footplate. It's a large footplate area. We're going to put in a new platform between the engine and its tender, so that you can get right in there, even if you're in a wheelchair, or have really real mobility issues. So it's a nice thing to do, because we can't let people climb all over the engines. They are very old, and some of them are delicate in many ways. But we can grant access to this particular engine.
But presumably none of that will stop the engines being restored to working order again.
No. 75027 is not currently very high on our priority list of restoration. We have a number of engines that are already in the workshop or are waiting to go into the workshop to be restored. This takes years. So, we've got that engine there for a good few years for the access. And then if it does get restored, we simply dismantle this platform, take the engine out, put a different engine in, and rebuild the platform. It's not a big deal if we need to change the engine over.
Now, of course, the centrepiece is Stepney, isn't it? Which is the Thomas the Tank Engine favourite for all the school children. Donkey's years.
Yes. Well, Stepney always was the first engine that you would see as you came into the running shed, and it still is. And in fact, the view of Stepney is better now because we have a new entrance way, which is kind of gives a good sort of panoramic view of Stepney. So Stepney's right there in the forefront. And then, of course, alongside that, we now have our Stepney driving experience, which is a kind of mock Stepney with film, the children can move the regulator and make the film go, and you can actually have a go at driving Stepney yourself, or as close to it as you can,
but without any hot bits.
Well, without any hot bits, exactly. No, safe but still fun.
So is this aimed at children, or is it aimed at anybody?
It's aimed at families. That's the key audience. But also, it will be interesting for an educational purpose. I'm going to be using it for school visits. We can set up extra activities within that space. There's the space to set up temporary exhibits and the activities that you can bring children into to gain something from, not just playing, but learning. The point is that all the interactives have some form of learning about an engine or how an engine works, the science behind it. That's the key thing.
Now, we spoke last about the 60th anniversary of the Bluebell Railway. Mm-hmm. So how has that gone?
It was very nice this year. We marked it with the last train back in March, with invited guests who had travelled back then or were, have memories of those last days of steam. So that was lovely. We've got some more 60th anniversary milestones coming up. Next year is the 60th anniversary of the formation of the Bluebell Railway Preservation Society. So this year was the closure of the line. Next year is the society, and then the following year is the big one. So in 2020, it will be the 60th anniversary of the Bluebell Railway, when we opened as the Bluebell Railway, and that will be a big deal. It'll be something special.
We'll put that in the calendar right away.
Yep.
Going back to the Ash Project, that's what we call it, but it's not its real name.
No, well, the project covers a few different things, but the exhibition we're talking about in the running shed is called Steamworks. So if you see that advertised anywhere, you'll know what it is. It's at Sheffield Park Station, Steamworks.
And that takes place, the things we've been talking about. Mm. But how important is it, you're the education officer, how important is it to the future of the railway that we continue to get young people involved?
We have a massive population of volunteers here who are, unfortunately, ageing. And we need young people coming up and being interested in steam. The railway runs on over 700 volunteers. There's only a handful of paid staff. Volunteer help is really important. And if the guys that are working here now can remember those days, they have the nostalgia for steam, we need to create that in new young people coming up. And so that's really important to get them interested.
And do you think there'll be future Bluebell drivers and guards and ticket staff among the school children that you bring in?
Absolutely. I mean, before I came to the railway, I had had nothing to do with steam. And since coming and doing this job, I'm slightly addicted. So we just need to get them over the threshold. We need to get them in the door and, you know, to experience how wonderful it is.
And girls as well as boys.
Yeah, obviously. I'm a girl. And I fired to East Grinstead back, so that can too.
So you've really caught the bug.
Yes, absolutely.
It's often seen, and it was in BR days, dirty, uncomfortable, long hours. Is it the same for a volunteer?
It can be, but it's up to you. You choose. You choose what you do and how much time you give. So, you know, you could do an all day on the engine and be here at 6 a.m. to clean and prepare that engine and finish at 6 p.m. You know, but similarly, you could just come in for a few hours and give that time.
But presumably, without the passengers, there will be no Bluebell Railway.
Absolutely not. No. I'm sure you're aware of how much it costs just to maintain an engine. If you're talking about hundreds of thousands of pounds for a new boiler or a restored boiler on an engine, and that's just one part of it, the costs of running a heritage line are huge, and we really wouldn't survive without donations, which is massive, or without these passengers coming in and, you know, having a lovely day out.
And back to the new project.
Yes.
So when does that open?
So the planned opening is over the weekend of the half term, the first weekend, which is the 20th and 21st of October. And that should be alongside some other fun science activities that we'll be putting on around Sheffield Park Station, and will be a really nice day out for family.
And it can people just turn up? They don't need to book?
No, not at all. Just come day, buy your ticket as you would normally when you come to the railway, and come and take part and have fun.
And do you think things are changing in the heritage railway movement?
I think so. I think there is a lot of thought, as we were talking about before, around getting young people interested and what more we can offer the visitor rather than just focusing on the enthusiasts that already exist. I think, you know, everybody realises that we need to encourage people to get a new passion.
And do you think that the Bluebell itself has got a long-term future?
Absolutely. I think Bluebell Railway is a very strong organisation with really dedicated people involved, and I know that they're going to be flexible and they're going to find a way to make sure Bluebell survives.
I was talking there to Ruth Rowett, who was telling us all about the Bluebell Railway and their brand new lottery-funded exhibition that's called, quite simply, Steam Works, and which opens shortly, just in time for you to take the children or grandchildren along during half term. And that's just about it from me, Chris English, and this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital DAB radio, and online at www.radioreverb.com. And so until next time we meet over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, it's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For information on where you can buy Brighton Gin or even go along for a look at the distillery, their website is www.brightongin.com. For tickets to see Evita at the Theatre or Brighton, you can just go to the box office in New Road, and if you do that, you avoid the booking fee. Or if you want to book online, it's www.atgtickets.com. Now, if you'd like more information to find out how you can get involved with chess and that training session at Age UK, you should contact Andrew Wallace, that's W-A-L-L-A-C-E, either by telephone on 07900 666 077, I'll give you that number again,
07900 666 077, or you can write to him by email at AJWallace, again WALLACE 64 at Yahoo, that's YAHOO.ES. And finally, you can get details of the Bluebell Railway's Steam Works exhibition, as well, of course, as train times, etc., during half term by visiting www.bluebell-railway.co.uk. But now there's just time for me, Chris English, to thank you for listening to this edition of At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Masses production for Radio Reverb. And to again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, and our colleague, Sarah Elgrew, for technical operation matters, and of course, Sarah's interview with Andrew Wallace, all about chess for older people. But my final thanks must go to you for letting all of us join you, our listener, wherever you may be. If you want to listen to a programme you may have missed, you can visit our new website, which is www.greymattersproductions.org, where you can listen again to a selection of our most recent programmes. And so until we meet again over the airwaves, whatever you do, please keep safe.